reducing costs in Florida's criminal justice system while still protecting the public. A closer look just ahead. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great 4th of July holiday. We are back live at 9 here, as always. Also, never miss a show. Download the WJCT app. Listen to us there anytime or on iTunes. We are streaming live right now as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Just ahead, a look at the growing bipartisan case for criminal justice reform, particularly here in Florida. What are your questions? Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, it's Movable Feast on the show as we pay a visit to a wildly growing company, Amelia Toffee. Plus, a new summer camp is up this season for your kids. We'll tell you about it. And some Miles Davis, courtesy of our own music director, David Luckin. All of that ahead. But first this hour, a look at the bipartisan calls to reform this nation's criminal justice system. The United States is the industrialized world's most prolific jailer. And here in Florida, the numbers are staggering. In fact, the Sunshine State, which has one of the highest incarceration rates in the country, will spend more than $2.4 billion this year on the state prison system. Not only that, public safety is perennially the largest item in our local county budgets, and that's largely due to our jails. In fact, on any given day, Florida's jails house 50,000 people. That's at an average of $64 a day, $1.2 billion in taxpayer funds per year. And when you drill down to the county level, the numbers get even more interesting in Florida. That's where we begin the hour. Now, increasingly, conservatives are calling for smart justice reforms to the system, joining their progressive colleagues. We begin the hour with a closer look as we welcome Chelsea Murphy. She's the Florida Director of Right on Crime, part of the Texas Public Policy Foundation, and she's on the line. Chelsea, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And to our callers, what are your thoughts about the bipartisan push for what's known as smart justice reform? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax or weigh in on Facebook. And Chelsea, you and another author recently published a piece in the Tampa Bay Times talking about the Right on Crime Statement of Principles. You're a signatory. This is a coalition of prominent conservatives committed to transparent and cost-effective criminal justice reform. Can you tell me a little bit more about the Right on Crime Statement of Principles?
Absolutely. So Right on Crime, as you said, we are a national campaign here to promote successful conservative solutions on American criminal justice policy. We are all about saving taxpayers' dollars, keeping families together, and more importantly, promoting public safety.
And these are ideas that you would think everyone could get behind, or most people. Public safety without too much government expenditure or a reasonable amount. So let's talk a little bit then about the data points in Florida, where we have mass incarceration, one of the highest incarceration rates in the nation. In fact, as you wrote, Florida data shows that the median jail stay for nonviolent misdemeanors is 60 days. That's double the median stay in other states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. You find a lot of waste and inefficiency and bad policy, really, in our criminal justice system in Florida. What do you see as the biggest issues?
Well, you know, really, it kind of varies. But, you know, coming here today, I wanted to make sure that we discussed just about Measures for Justice and how they're here to kind of bring to light some of the issues just by really relaying the facts. So, like we said, this is data portal that uses measures, and that data covers cases from arrest to post-conviction. It's free. Anybody can get on and look at it. And the interesting thing when you pull that up, is you really can see the numbers. It's not emotions. It's not anything other than just strictly data. And the nice thing about this is it's allowing people to take a look at it from anybody, just the average taxpayer. But then, I know that Bill Cervone, who's a state attorney for the Eighth Circuit, he's been using that data and kind of took a look at it and noticed that six of his counties, the rates of cases that were not prosecuted varied from 13 to 36%. And of course, that was kind of very shocking to him. And, he was wondering, are his prosecutors declining cases because, the majority of them are bad? Are they declining them because they're overworked and under-resourced and they can't accept it? So this way, by looking at this data, they can take a step back and see, well, what do we need? What needs to happen? And that's, not necessarily for anybody other than, the people who are looking at that data to take a look at. And I think it will hopefully drive great policy and also start a discussion based on facts as opposed to emotion.
Sure. And this is easy. As you said, anyone can access Measures for Justice at measuresforjustice.org and then go into the data portal and look and search by county. Chelsea, why is it so important to drill down to the county level?
Well, that's where kind of it all starts from, right? That's really where the majority of money is going. As you had mentioned, and as I read in that article, it says that of our 67 counties, we have 50,000 in Florida jails currently a day. And at that rate, it's $64 a day to house that inmate, which is at $1.2 billion in taxpayers' money. And the fact that this conversation isn't more on the table is kind of shocking to me. Healthcare and education are two very large, the top two in our Florida's budget, but not very far behind is corrections. And I think that we really need to see, where is our return on investment? What are we doing? What kind of steps do we need to make sure that, one, we're making sure that people are not getting back into our prisons and not coming back. And when they do go back out, we want to make sure that we're giving them the proper tools that they need to be productive members of society.
Sure. And here in Duval County over the years, a program known as the Jacksonville Journey has really tried to take a whack at that and reduce recidivism rates, find reentry programs, reentry measures for ex-offenders that want to get a job, want to reintegrate into society. What do you think are the biggest stumbling blocks to that as you look around the state and also around the nation?
I would say funding is a big issue. And I think that, just based on the numbers that, you can see, how many people are being incarcerated, how much we're spending. And then not to mention some of these people that are sitting in jail, there was, in Wisconsin, he noticed that there's 40% of the defendants who failed to pay bail, their bails were less than $500. And so that was kind of an interesting fact. And so it's, we need to take a step back and see, where can we properly spend our money and how can we get the best return on our investment?
Now, you're part of a coalition of conservatives committed to criminal justice reform. Where does Right on Crime stand when it comes to the new push by Attorney General Jeff Sessions to really get away from some of these smart justice reforms that have been bubbling up in recent years and that seem to have bipartisan support?
Well, I think that in regards to what Jeff Sessions says, I just think that really what we're here to talk about is Measures for Justice. And I think that, Right on Crime, as I said, we're here just strictly for saving taxpayers' dollars, keeping families together, and promoting public safety. And in regards to the opioid crisis and other issues, it's not about being tough on crime. It's about being smart and right on crime.
And let's talk about the opioid epidemic for just a moment, which is raging throughout the country, and we have a big problem here in Florida. How do you see the system renegotiating its stance, I guess, and how they deal with people that get ensnared into the system due to addiction?
Well, I know that this past year there was a fentanyl bill that was passed, and it, we kind of had some issues with that in regards to a lack of a safety valve. But, again, I think that hopefully this program or this data portal, Measures for Justice, will be able to take a look at everything that's going on here and see, what kind of people are we arresting for this? Are we really arresting the big-time traffickers, or are we getting low-level drug offenders who perhaps would be better served in a drug court or some sort of alternative to prison, where, again, that's going to cost taxpayers a ton of money.
And as Chelsea mentioned, the website is measuresforjustice.org, where you can look county by county at your hometown's performance, really, by the numbers when it comes to criminal justice. Let's go to your calls, 549-2937. Daryl is in St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, good morning.
Good morning. Congratulations on doing this. I think it's long overdue. I would really like to know what the revenue generated by low-level arrests are in for weed, tickets, those kinds of things. How much revenue is generated by the justice system? My experience is that crime pays, but crime pays the justice systems, whether that's the courts who charge the fees or whether that's the jailer or the bonder. I have somebody who refused to let the officers search the car. Of course, they brought out the canine. There was nothing in the car, but they tested a empty prescription bottle for weed. And of course, it said there was no weed in it, but oh, it tested that it had it. Taken to jail, was required to be bailed out. About 2 hours in the county jail was $300. You could stay at the Casa Monica for two nights for that price. Then, of course, there was the court and the lawyer. And so the justice system generated a few thousand dollars. Plus a young man's criminal record for not having any weed in the vehicle. So how much money is each individual county generating from throwing, basically kids smoking joints or low-level crimes? If somebody's creating a violent crime, somebody's stealing something, throw them in jail.
But gotcha. Daryl, thanks for that. Chelsea. What about that argument that we need to decriminalize some of these lower level offenses? What are your thoughts? What's right on crime's position there?
Absolutely. I think that's a great, great comment. And I think that, you're absolutely right. We shouldn't be making money off of low level mistakes there. But I think in regards to stuff like that, I think we really need to be taking a look at the numbers. And, I don't have those numbers off the top of my head, or do I know how much each counties are generating in that type of revenue. But I do think that, this Measures for Justice data portal will really start to bring to light what kind of, how many people are getting in there, what are they getting arrested for? And so we can really start to take a look at, how are we prosecuting people and what's the best method to making sure that we're reducing recidivism and properly prosecuting people.
549-2937. Sean on the west
Hello.
Side. Hey, good morning.
Hello. How are you all doing?
Good.
Hey, I know it's short for time. I just want to touch base on this topic. I have heroin dealers, a big-time operation. Truck pulls in 18-wheeler every week. I've contacted the JSO, been through all this with JSO. I've even had to get DEA to fire the JSO up. Worked with an undercover detective. And so I hear the low level, and we don't want to lock them up. But what about using the low level to catch the big level? And it's an epidemic, and we do need to cut costs. But I see it right across the street from my house, big-time heroin operation going on. JSO knows about it. I call every week. Nothing happens.
All right. Thanks for that, Sean. Chelsea Murphy.
Yeah, and let me be very clear. We are not about making sure that people, get off or, what's a crime is a crime, and that's not to be, taken lightly. But my comment in regards to low-level offenders, catching them versus the big-time traffickers, I think that, absolutely these traffickers need to be stopped. And what means, that's what we kind of look to law enforcement for. But that's assuming that these low-level offenders are going to talk and lead them there. But either way, we want to make sure that we're properly giving people the sentences that are deserved for the crime.
And you talk, and by the way, your website is rightoncrime.com. And when you look through the conservative case for reform, it's striking the degree to which you're really singing from the same songbook in many respects as more progressive groups. I even say Black Lives Matter and the new Jim Crow movement when they talk about the problem of mass incarceration in this country. In Florida, in particular, we are a mass incarcerating state. We incarcerate huge numbers of people. And so let's talk about that for a minute, Chelsea. How do you see dealing with the issue of mass incarceration when you talk about conservative first principles for reforming the system?
Well, you know, our statement of principles, we strongly support constantly constitutionally limited government, transparency, individual liberty, personal responsibility, and, of course, free enterprise. And, you know, with all of that in mind, like you said, we are the third prison system. It's the third largest piece of Florida's budget. And as you mentioned, $2.4 billion is just on corrections, but $4.4 billion on criminal justice as a whole. That's including mental health, all of those types of things in there. And so I think Right on Crime is here to make sure that, you know, our taxpayers are getting the return on investment that they're investing here. And not to mention, we want to first and foremost promote public safety. And that means, you know, making sure that we get those trucks of heroin. That's appalling to me. And I think that, you know, especially with the numbers of people are dying with opioid crises and such, it's scary. And so we need to make sure that we are properly attending to this matter and this emergency. And that means making sure that people are getting drug treatment and helping people versus just locking them up and throwing away the keys.
Here's a comment on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. In addition to not voting in Florida, felons are barred from getting a variety of professional licenses, such as a barber or beautician. If we want to reduce recidivism, returning citizens need to be able to get jobs, loans or grants to go to school, and be able to restart their lives. And a minute ago, you touched on that, how to reduce the revolving door of people reoffending and going back into the system. And you mentioned funding is a key. As a conservative, as you support limited government, how then to address some of these funding challenges from a conservative point of view?
Well, I think that, again, you've got to go down to, we have to start with policy, and policy will you know, is driven from data. And I think that the numbers speak for themselves. And I think that conservatives are all about saving money. I think that's a pretty any given day. And so what we want to see is making sure that, you know, sometimes we've got to start stuff on the front end in order to make sure we get the results that we need on the back end.
Let's go to Hank in downtown Jacksonville now. Hi, Hank. Thanks for calling. Good morning.
Hello?
Hey, good morning.
Hi.
Go ahead.
What? Someone put me on hold.
Oh, no, you're on. Go ahead, Hank.
Oh, I'm on the radio?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm calling in about the program I'm listening to right now and about people who are talking about trying to lower the tax money that's being spent on inmates in jail. I run a program for reentry here in Jacksonville, and our beds are $16 a day for the reentry program, and we have a lot of empty beds, and we have sent hundreds of letters out to these people. It is absolute lies what they're talking about. They do not want to fix the problem. They make the money. The problem is they want you to jump through all these loopholes and hoops. And the facts are there is help for these guys, and they would never have to put that many people in jail if they didn't want to. So I'm here to tell you it is not true.
Well, let me ask you, what's the name of your reentry program?
Well, I'm not willing to talk about it on open air because I have a protection between me and my the people who live in my building. So I do not talk about it publicly. If you want to take me offline, we'll talk about it.
Okay, well, but tell me a little bit more then about what you're saying, that there's too many hoops to jump through for people to take advantage of your program.
Well, you know, the fact is you got to go through the program the way they want you to go through a program. Everybody has the way they, you know, send people to a place, or, you know, the way they're released and they have to report somewhere. You know, here in Jacksonville, it's a JREC. JREC is a reporting place. You know, and I don't know if I'm stepping on anyone's toes there, so.
No, that's okay.
But the point is everyone has an organization and their either their bylaws or how they have to do business. And the facts are there's many places like my place. I'm only one of many. And there's always open beds. And the problem is they don't want to pay the $16. They would rather put it, just keep them in jail.
Who's they? When you say they, who do you mean by they?
Probation, parole, any organization that allows people to go and stay somewhere.
So you're saying the incentive. So Hank, you're saying the incentives are toward. You're saying that the system is still set up to incentivize incarceration, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, all day long. There's answers out there that they could cut this cost of people in prison or jail in half, and they do not do it.
Okay.
There are so many people still sitting in jail that we have offered to come to our program for $16 a day, and they do not take it.
Only all right.
Very, very.
Thanks for that, Hank. I appreciate that. And stay on hold, if you will. We'll get your number. Okay, so Chelsea Murphy, what about that? You and progressive activists both are calling for this system to be radically reformed, but when you talk to callers like Hank, he'll say, well, look, it's structurally set up to incentivize the opposite of what you're calling for in many respects. So what about that challenge?
Well, I think that that's what we're here for. We're here to educate policymakers and to bring these numbers to light, to show them that, you know, that it is possible to help reform these individuals, perhaps in a reentry program or something to that nature, as opposed to spending $64 a day for them to be sitting in jail. And not to mention, you know, ruining their record or just, there can be all sorts of different things. But really what we're here to do is to bring a conservative approach to criminal justice reform. And we're here to educate policymakers and show them these facts. And that's what, you know, the beauty of Measures for Justice is going to allow. This data portal is allowing us to really take a look and drill down on all of our counties and seeing what the problem is and how can we fix it. Or if there's not a problem, you know, seeing which counties are doing it right. And so I think that this is going to really be a great tool to help educate legislators and people across the nation.
It's fascinating to speak with you. And again, that website, you can drill down into county data at measuresforjustice.org. Chelsea Murphy, the Florida Director of Right on Crime, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And much more still ahead later. If you've got a need for a last-minute summer camp, maybe the kids are driving you crazy, we've got a solution for you. But up next, Movable Feast on today's show as we take a delicious look at Amelia Toffee. Back in a moment.
Next time on 1A, religious liberty has been a cornerstone of America since before it was a nation. A new Smithsonian exhibit explores that fight through the objects early Americans prayed with and prayed to. We'll talk to the man behind the exhibit and explore religious worship through the power of objects that became artifacts. Next time on 1A, weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
If you want to understand this world, just follow the money.
Chicken is a big business. We are a chicken nation.
In terms of a whitewater year, this is going to rank in the top five.
The running joke in Hollywood is that no movies ever make money.
Oil, of course, is the lifeblood of modern civilization.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Stories from all over the economy next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Want to learn more about fitness and heart health? Join WJZT and Baptist Health for Girls Day Out, Saturday, August 26th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Spend the day with experts that will engage you to be a better you. Enjoy breakfast, lunch, session, gift bag, and so much more. Tickets are just $40. Log on to WJZT.org/Girls Day Out and get your tickets today.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Welcome back. Well, it's a new and tasty product that's grown wildly in popularity in just 2 years on the market. In today's Movable Feast, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks with Anita Comiskey about her delicious creation, Amelia Toffee.
Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato, please.
Anita Comiskey, I'm really so proud to have you here with me today to talk about something that you created 2 years ago that has just shot the moon. Your Amelia Toffee. And I'm going to say it clearly because it's not Amelia Taffy. It is definitely toffee. And I just can't wait to hear and share your story about what happened to you 2 years ago when you had the idea and the concept.
Well, Lee, thanks so much for inviting me here today. It's sure a pleasure to be able to share our story. And we really got our start through the Women's Food Alliance 2 years ago. And you were the one that welcomed us into the group, and you allowed me to bring our first batch of Amelia Toffee to the group. And gosh, the reception that we received that night was our launch to for the next few years.
I remember the excitement because you brought it, and it was a surprise to all of our attending members and everybody in the hospitality and food industry, and everybody says, "Oh, my gosh, what is this?" And of course, you shared the origin, which I look forward to hearing again.
Yes, I learned how to cook from my grandmother, and this was a recipe that we worked on over a couple of years. And gosh, now it's so shocking to me to say that I've been making this for 50 years, but I have. So it's tried and true. Our tagline is not your grandma's toffee, because I took grandma's recipe and we've kicked it up a few notches. We have many different flavors, unlike any other toffee maker on the planet right now. We make a bourbon toffee, and we use the St. Augustine Distillery's bourbon. We also make a rum toffee, and it's co-branded, so it's sold in their gift shop. We make key lime, and we make orange bliss, which is really our Florida flavors. And then we have one for those foodies out there, which is Ghost of Amelia, and we make that with Grand Marnier and a little ghost pepper salt.
What a combination. Ghost pepper salt and Grand Marnier. Now that is a confection.
It really is. And the history behind that flavor is we were asked by the Ritz-Carlton on Amelia Island to come up with a flavor for Concord. And we thought that we needed something a little sexy and fun and certainly different. And the Grand Marnier gives it a nice orange base. And we make all of our toffee with dark chocolate. So the orange comes through. And then we lightly dust it with some ghost pepper salt. So there's a nice warmth at the end.
Would you share a little bit about how you are handcrafting? This is all handmade confection right here in Jacksonville. And for our listeners who love toffee but have never made it, tell us, what are the ingredients in your toffee? Without talking about the recipe, but what is the base of toffee?
Well, the base is very simple. It's butter and some sugar and then a liquid. And most toffee is made with a vanilla and maybe a little water. And all of you out there now know that we substitute the water with some bourbon or rum or little Grand Marnier or orange oil.
And one of your names is called On Tap.
On
so
tap.
Obviously it must be a craft beer.
A craft beer, and we use a number of local craft beers. And for those listeners out there that love to cook, you can use beer in a lot of different things. The alcohol burns off, so all of our toffee is kid safe, so you don't have to worry about your kids.
And it leaves the flavor.
It leaves the flavor. So with a lot of the craft beer and also the bourbon from the distillery, there's a lot of flavor. So with the craft beers, we find a very dark, thick, rich stout or porter that has a lot of underlying flavors of caramel and chocolate. And boy, it just really complements not only the butter and sugar, but the dark chocolate. And then all of our toffee is coated with California roasted salted almonds.
Now, visually, to me, Amelia Toffee is just, it just has this amazing, appealing image. So, because our listeners can't see, it's a lovely little brown bag. All of your labels are bright and vibrant, and your ingredients. So, when you pick up this little bag that's maybe 7 inches by 5 inches, you can pop it into your purse, and then you can eat toffee all day and share it. Well, you really don't want to share a lot of it because, you know, once you taste it, you want to keep it all for yourself. But tell me how you have managed in less than 2 years to have this incredible culinary distribution of your product.
Well, we have an amazing community here in Jacksonville and a lot of toffee eaters, and we really love all of you out there, and please continue to support us. We have been very blessed because our consumers have shared our story and shared us, and we've created demand. So not only are we sold in Northeast Florida now, we're sold down to the southernmost town in Florida. We are moving into the Atlanta Mart next month. We'll have a permanent display. So all of you who are going up for the holiday mart, stop in and see us.
Wow, you're going to have a permanent display?
Permanent display. And we've got a distributor over in Sarasota that distributes specialty goods. So we're part of their network now. We've got independent sales reps. And gosh, I think one of the secrets, too, is when you have a good product and people start discovering you, the word starts to spread. And we love that.
But I have observed you in the past 2 years just not giving up. You believed in your product. You believed in the support system of everybody who loved your product. And I know you also do a lot of Amelia Toffee with your husband.
Yes, and he has a very important title. He is VP of Logistics, and he will tell you that he is the schlepper. And if you're listening, honey, I love you madly. And don't ever give up the schlepping job. Yes. As all of us in the food business, it really is a labor of love. You go into it not to make dollars, not even pennies, but you do it because you love it.
There isn't anybody that I know who has tasted your Amelia Toffee that hasn't looked at this lovely little piece of classic confection, and it's only about a half inch thick, mm-hmm. and there's this honey-colored toffee in the center. And then a thin, almost like a thin veil of dark chocolate on both sides and chopped nuts. So where do you see Amelia Toffee next year, in year number three?
In year number three, we hope it's in everyone's household across the nation. We are looking to continue to grow and expand, and we're also looking to add new products. We have an amazing production team, and we've been very blessed that they've been with us for over a year, and we are continually working on new flavors. So all of you out there can follow us on Facebook and Instagram and see what's new and what's coming. I hope that you fall in love with that orange bliss, Lee.
Well, I am going to taste it and say goodbye for today. And when you get more flavors, Anita Comiskey, on Amelia Toffee .com. Please share it, and we'll try to share the taste. Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.
And we'll be right back.
Make an appointment with Public Radio's favorite family doc on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health. It'll be a jam-packed hour on healthy living, including this tasty recipe for...
strawberry cob salad.
We always have a great time. So will you on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX.
Sundays at 5 on 89.9 WJCT.
Some people get to be Cinderella or the prince or fairy godmother or even the evil stepsisters. And I anxiously await to see what I'm going to be. And I'm given the role of fairy dust.
Join us for more true stories told live. This time, quilting, bartending, CPR, and fairy dust. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Saturdays at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Christian McBride. On the next Jazz Night in America, it's David Murray. We'll hear music he presented at the 2015 Winter Jazz Festival in New York, including the late, great pianist Jerry Allen. We remember her and hear some incredible improvised music. That's next on Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, are your kids going a little stir-crazy this summer? Wish you could get them in a camp, but think it might be too late? Never fear, because the Five and Dime has teamed up with Short Stack Theater Company. That's a troupe of six former Douglas Anderson students now enrolled in performing arts programs at some of the best universities in the country. And they're offering 3 week-long theater camps for local kids this summer, and scholarships, too. Here with more, we welcome Craig Levitt, founding member of the Five and Dime. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Emily Suarez and Avery Sedlicek, co-artistic directors of Short Stack Theater Company. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hey, good morning.
And we'll hear from the Short Stack kids in a minute. But first, Craig Levitt, how did this all come about?
Well, as many of our listeners know, that we are on here fairly frequently speaking about our productions. We have just moved into a permanent location downtown on Adams Street, and it's kind of been all that we could handle as way of our human resources that we have. And these two youngsters, who we have known and admired for many years and watched growing up in the theater community here in Jacksonville, they came to us with this proposal to partner with us to provide the programming for summer camp this year. And since we had our hands full with doubling and actually tripling the number of productions we're doing, we were happy to bring them on board to provide this opportunity for campers in the urban core.
And this is an opportunity that's active right now. Emily, Avery, you're both Douglas Anderson graduates, right?
Correct.
Correct, yes.
And where do you go to school now?
I go to Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh.
Very nice.
And I go to Shenandoah University, about an hour outside of D.C.
Very nice. And you're both in performing arts majors, right?
Correct.
So you decided to offer summer camp at the Five and Dime. This is camp that parents, if you're listening right now, they still have spots available. What happens in the camp?
Well, we have 3 different camps, the first of which that starts this coming Monday, so we're really excited, and that is for ages 5 to 10, and that is kind of general theater and introducing them to the world of theater and acting and everything like that, and mm-hmm. the following 2 camps are for ages 10 to 15, and they are an acting camp and a musical theater camp.
So beginning and advanced, all ages.
Right.
And so this starts Monday. How excited
Correct.
Are you?
Really excited. I'm excited to have the hands-on part come to us, because that's the part that, like, I really imagined whenever I wanted to do the camp. All this stuff is the stuff you kind of didn't expect, that it's been a learning process, whereas this upcoming week is kind of what I've been imagining. And, like, you know, it's the initial idea I had was hanging out with the kids. So that'll be the fun part, I think, the rewarding part for sure.
This will be the first camp that you two have led and conducted?
Yes.
Yeah.
Camp, yeah. Classes yes. here and there, yeah, I've led classes, but camp, getting to spend a whole week with them, that'll be the fun part.
And not only can parents enroll their kids in these camps over the next few weeks, there are scholarships available too, yeah?
Yes, there are scholarships available. You can apply actually online when you register by going to thefiveanddime.org and selecting education. There is also tax-free donations where there is a donation button where if you would like to contribute to a scholarship for a camper in the urban core, we would be happy for you to do so.
And so this is the perfect camp if you've got a budding performer at home, you know, a singer, a dancer, someone who loves to act and perform. This is a great opportunity. And what's exciting about this is, as a mom too, I always figure it's way too late by this point in the summer to get my kid in a camp. You guys have open spots, so you want to put the call out right now.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Exactly.
And just go to thefiveanddime.org to register.
And go to the education tab.
Okay. And so do you both hope to be actors when you graduate college? What are your goals?
Yes, most definitely. I hope to stay within the arts and theater specifically. Maybe not always be an actor, but definitely stay within theater and be doing something within that medium.
Emily, you too?
Yes, definitely would like to have a career in acting, whether that be in film or theater or musical theater. Etc.
Well, best of luck, guys.
Thank you
so much.
And this is such a neat opportunity, and it's also a way to get to know the Five and Dime Theater in downtown Jacksonville. Just go to their website, thefiveanddime.org/education. It's 3-week-long summer camps starting next Monday. Craig Levitt, founding member of Five and Dime, and Short Stack Theater directors Emily Suarez and Avery Sedlicek. Thanks for being here, you guys.
Thank you
so much.
In a moment, David Luckin on a Miles Davis special tonight on the Electro Lounge.
Next Fresh Air, we talk with Rick Wartzman, author of the new book, The End of Loyalty, The Rise and Fall of Good Jobs in America. It's about the erosion of the social contract between employer and employee. We'll also hear from Sharon Horgan, co-creator and star of the Amazon comedy series, Catastrophe. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Hello, I'm Doug Hansard, and I listen to the Florida Times Union On Demand as read by WJCT Radio Reading Service volunteers. The sound quality is excellent. This is a great asset for people like me, sightless and on the go. The Florida Times Union Daily on the radio reading website at wjct.org/radio reading. Take advantage of it, and while you're there, register as a listener.
I'm Vince Kong, host of Redux, WJCT's weekly news magazine and the news podcast of the First Coast. Tune in to catch up on the latest local stories, plus music from our after-hours programming anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to WJCT Redux now on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's regarded as the greatest jazz album of all time. Recorded in 1959, Miles Davis' Kind of Blue still sells thousands of copies every year. And it's a special treat tonight on the Electro Lounge. Music director David Luckin is going to take a deep dive into the album, Kind of Blue. Good morning.
Good Morning, Melissa. Such a gorgeous album. If you only have one jazz album on your shelf, this is the one to have. If you're going to go off into a desert or when the apocalypse comes or the zombies, this is the album you want to have with you. It is just so accessible. It is so gorgeous. And everything's been said about it, so I won't waste time with that. But to say that we're playing the mono version tonight, I got this great nine-album box set of Miles in mono, and that's kind of the way it was recorded before people played with it and separated the instruments. So you're going to hear it the way it was meant to be heard tonight at 9. And I also extended the first set. Usually we're like 40 minutes. Well, tonight we're going to go the whole first hour, so you can hear the album uninterrupted.
Wow. And so when you listen to it in mono, what's the difference for people that don't understand that differentiation?
Well, when they were, like with the Beatles or Dylan or Miles or now the Stones, everyone's putting out their music in mono because it's all together the way it was recorded in the studio. Mm-hmm. And then they would go in and they would electronically, you know, separate, like with the Beatles, you hear the tambourine in the right and the guitar in the left. Mm-hmm. And it's just sure. Not the way we grew up with it. We grew up with transistor radios and we heard it all in one speaker. So now everyone who's anyone is releasing their original recordings in mono the way they were originally released. And there was a money thing, too. When I was a kid, you paid a dollar more for stereo for the album. So we bought the mono and we grew up with the mono, and now mono is back.
Now let's talk about Miles Davis for a minute.
The best.
Why do you love Davis so much?
Because he started, Bob Bednar should be in here because he knows so much more than me, but what I love about him is he started in the late 40s and he was still mm-hmm. going into the 80s and he constantly changed. He never stayed the same. He was constantly innovating and bringing, fusion jazz is all because of Miles. Everyone has started a fusion band from Chick Corea to Joseph Zawinul with Weather Report to Herbie Hancock with the Headhunters. They all played with Miles first, and then they mm-hmm. all went off and did their own thing. But Miles is like the father to me. Uh-huh. Miles is, of course, says, without Louis Armstrong, I wouldn't be here. So Miles looked to Louis and said, Louis, you're the king. And now Miles, he just took that crown and wore it proudly. He started Acid Jazz. We end the hour tonight with Mystery from Doobop. From like 1984 or 5, and he's doing acid jazz. So no matter what it was, he was in the front of the line. He was the creator. Everyone followed him.
And there's something about this album too. Even if you're not a jazz fan, this is a really accessible album.
That's it. You can hear it now behind us. It's just so beautifully done. No one's going crazy. You know, jazz can be really frenetic, and some people don't like it at all because they think it's all that crazy music. And Miles kind of just turned it all back and said, no, we're going to do something just really cool and beautiful. And no one over, here's a little Cannonball, and John Coltrane's in it. And we could give a listen to a little bit if you want.
Sure. You know, it's the kind of album that you could put on at a dinner party.
At poolside?
Or at the pool. It's sort of portable. It goes all kinds of places.
It is. It is the ultimate desert island album because no matter what mood you're in, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, this is perfect music. If it's just a brunch by the pool, this is perfect background music. I used to DJ some, and whenever I play this, inevitably someone would walk up to me, young, old, all walks of life, and say, oh, I know that. That's my favorite. I had a young man come up to me and he said, that's my clock alarm. I wake up to this every morning. He was like 20 years old, and I thought, that's an album with staying power.
It's
where a 20-year-old kid wakes up to it every day. Or, you know, somebody like me over 50, I love it. This is just, you know, like I say, if you only have one jazz album on your shelf, go buy Kind of Blue or listen tonight, and then you'll be so inspired to get a copy.
You're going to devote the full hour.
The whole hour with Miles. And we'll fill in with a little Porgy and Bess. Miles did Porgy and Bess. We're going to hear Summertime, and we're also going to hear My Funny Valentine. So it's going to be a nice hour of chilled out jazz the way it should be.
He's David Luckin, our music director. It's Kind of Blue. Listen to the full album tonight at 9 on 89.9. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for the offer.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Merchart. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app and listen anytime. Next on 1A, the fight over the Dakota Access Pipeline. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.